Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We're live in the Geico Outkick Studios. Outkick the Coverage, second hour on this Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours from all of us at Fox Sports Radio. Live in the Geico Outkick Studios, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. Clay and the crew taking the rest of the week off for the holiday. Happy Thanksgiving to them. Jeff Schwartz with me. I'm Jason Martin. You can find the show and the brand at Outkick. Clay's at Clay Travis, of course. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at JMart Radio. Jeff, it is, what is this, the fourth year we've done this show in a row on Thanksgiving?
Probably.
At least three.
Three or four. What's this, 2020? So, I mean, at least three in a row.
I mean, 2020 feels like it's about 5 years on its own.
Yeah, it does. Yes. But I think we've done this is at least the third,
at least, because we've talked about you frying a turkey every single year. Yes. And you putting out a video usually, or at least you have in the past on Twitter. You've put out a video of what you've done to turkeys.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'll do a video. It depends if my wife wants to film it. But yeah, I do put a video out. It's not that hard. It's not that difficult. It's not that cool. It's just, I like the first sound of like the turkey hitting the oil, just like that, the crisping of the skin sound. It's exciting. It really is exciting.
Ravens Steelers not happening is not exciting.
Correct.
Not exciting at all. It makes it easier for you to go to the theater and watch a movie tonight, though, with that like bought out theater for yourself.
Yeah, to be fair, I did not buy that theater out. That's money that
I would not.
But my friend called me yesterday. Was like, hey man, I got this theater. We're supposed to have friends from California. They couldn't come out, so it's just me, my wife, and my daughter. And like, do you guys want to come? I was like, oh, well, sounds good. Yeah, because if the night game was happening, I would not be there. That's correct. Because Ravens Steelers is a fantastic matchup, and it's important. And as much as I would like to see my friend, we don't see each other as often anymore. I'm not going to do it with the game on.
So let's talk about the Ravens a little bit more. This Lamar Jackson is now being talked about again. The voices that got awfully quiet last year are starting to reemerge a little bit. We saw a couple of weeks ago, Pro Football Focus, who I talked to somebody from that organization once a week, and Eric Eager, who's a doctor who's in Big Ten country, put a list out of the top play callers in the NFL, Jeff, and Greg Roman was top eight on that list. And I thought it was really curious to mention him right now, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but Greg Roman is a guy that I've never seen. Okay, now they figured out what I'm doing, so I'm going to start doing this. I've never seen that. I feel like Greg Roman has a little bit too much Mike Leach in him when it comes to this is just kind of when you figure out what it is that he's doing, he just becomes less effective at that thing as opposed to he's also got a second act.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this in San Francisco when Roman was there as well, where he was when he went to the same offense they're basically running now, is they got stale after a while. And then they tried to transition to more of a passing game under Kaepernick, and it just didn't work, right? So that's the concern here. When you have your quarterback coming out a couple of weeks ago saying like, hey, people know what
we're calling,
what we're doing. Like, you know what we're doing. Like, this is a problem, right? And so you're right. He doesn't have, at least yet, that change up, right? That second gear. And it's a problem. It's not going to change this year, especially with their injuries on the offensive line. And, so when you're not playing well, like right now, right? They're not playing well. You typically default back to what you know best if you're a coach, because you want to say, okay, what we're doing is not working. Let's hone everything back and let's just run our simple stuff, the stuff we're good at, the stuff we know what to do, because you know, I know it's easy to say, well, let's just run other things, but when and just like in life, right? Like when things aren't going well, you kind of go back to your principles, right? You hone in on what you're good at, what you know what to do in life, how you've gone over things in the past. Same with football coaches, right? They're not going to do stuff they've never done before when things aren't going well. It's kind of, you think they would, but they really don't. And this is why at the end of games, by the way, a little tangent, you know, people think coaches like don't know how to manage games at the end of games. And sure, that's true, but a lot of them just go back to what they know, right? If they like to pass the ball at the end of games, pass the ball in general, when there's a third and three with 2 minutes left, they kind of want to pass the ball. Like, that's what they know best. And Greg Roman knows this offense best. So I think they're going to hone it, actually make it more simple, which isn't very good. And then they might spend this offseason trying to figure it out. But you know, there was no offseason, Jason, this year, right? There was no offseason. So there wasn't time to work on a new offense. And you get in training camp, and it's a shortened training camp. It's condensed. There was no time to do things differently. So this is what their offense is right now. It's a mess. Their offensive line's beat up. The running backs, obviously, for this weekend's game aren't very healthy. They're not passing the ball downfield. Lamar Jackson hasn't been terribly good this year. So there's no easy fix.
The Lamar argument emerges, and you get to the whole can he throw thing again. And I tossed that out the window, but there's a difference between can he throw and is he precise? And I think that second question is one that's very valid to ask when it comes to Lamar. And then you look at the talent that's around him right now and the receivers that they have a bunch of guys that do kind of the same thing. They have guys that are not very tall, that are not go up and get it receivers, that are quick and athletic, but they don't have the alpha dog receiver. They've got Marquise Brown. I don't think Hollywood Brown's a wide receiver one. I think he's more of a two on a good football team.
Yeah.
But I'm looking around this league, Jeff, and I'm looking at all the teams that are set up to make the playoffs or in contention. And I'm not seeing a whole lot that don't have an alpha dog wide receiver. I know it's a quarterback's league, but look at the difference between Deshaun Watson last year and this year. Deshaun's playing out of his mind this year. Like, he's quietly having the best season in the NFL that no one's talking about.
Correct.
Mahomes is the MVP of the league. And the amazing thing about Mahomes is he's falling into LeBron James syndrome, where he's the MVP just by doing Patrick Mahomes things.
Correct.
Like, he doesn't even have to be transcendent in order to be the best player in football. But
correct.
Deshaun Watson, last year, he had Hopkins. This year he doesn't. They've got 3 wins, 2 of which are against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then you look at Buffalo, and just how do you feel about Buffalo a year ago, week 12? You're like, well, they're going to make the playoffs, and Josh Allen's playing a little bit better. But now you got Stephon Diggs, who's leading the league in a lot of categories in receiving. He's a dynamic number one guy. And if you, again, you look at Devontae Adams in Green Bay, number one guy. Michael Thomas has been a bit of a head case this year, but he's still certainly a bona fide number one guy. Even teams that are having success with the young quarterbacks. Justin Herbert's got Keenan Allen, who I think might be the most underrated player in the NFL over the past 5 years or so. So there's a common theme that good teams also tend to have alpha dog wide receivers. Even with the Titans, they're right there in the playoff hunt. They've got A.J. Brown. And they've got Corey Davis, who's a top five pick, who's a great kind of second banana behind an A.J. Brown. Even Dallas, they've got guys that you can look at in the same way. There are a few outliers, but look at the Ravens' receiving talent. Their leading receiver on Sunday was Dez Bryant, with 4 catches for 28 yards, I think it was, outside of Andrews, yeah, of course. But I don't think, do you look at Andrews like you look at Kelsey and Kittle? Because I don't. I don't think they're the same kind of player at all.
Look, the Ravens offense is not set up to have, you know, DeAndre Hopkins be their best player. Like, that's some of the problem, right? It's like their offense is not really built to be an offense that passes the ball down the field. So even if they had all, like, you know, take the Bucks trio of wide receivers, or the Chiefs, or whoever else, right? You know, you want to say, or an individual guy. You know, take the Cardinals trio of wide receivers. Their offense is not a passing offense. Like, it wouldn't matter, in my opinion, if they had those guys. It would be helpful, maybe, but their offense would still be run first. And that's the concern. It's more of the structure of the offense, Jason, than I think it is than the actual players on the offense.
Okay. All right. So
and that's the problem. It's like, it's really tough to be like, hey, throw the ball downfield. You know, it's just, you know, anyone who watches them play will tell you the same thing. They are, they're very much a middle of the field throwing operation.
No question about that. They don't throw, the offense does not run outside the hash marks.
And that's a problem because guess what? You can just put everyone, you can put nine defenders, you know, inside the numbers. And it makes it really tough when you're not running the ball as well. Teams are playing, you know, higher, you know, keeping safeties high, and you can't pass the ball then. Like, it's just, it's a very limited offense.
Well, are you ever going to see a change then? Like, that becomes a question. Like, are they going to change anything, or are they going to end up having to move on from Greg Roman and finding somebody else?
Well, they haven't shown the ability in this offense to change. And so I guess we'll see in a bigger offseason. But it's interesting because, you know, I was a pretty big Lamar Jackson detractor. I didn't really think that he was going to be good in the NFL. And obviously he won the MVP last season, so he kind of proved all of us wrong. But and I have not made this case at all. I mean, I think that I was wrong last year, and I'll stay wrong. But I think we're seeing some of the things that we said we were worried mm-hmm. about, is that kind of when you get figured out, what is your next thing? What is your next, you know, what's your next move? How are you going to improve your game? How's the offense going to improve around you? Because we've seen, you know, even like a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who, you know, I would say that before Matt LaFleur got there, he was struggling a little bit. He wasn't the same player. And now LaFleur is there, and they've changed the offense, and Aaron Rodgers has been more open to doing new things, and he's become a better quarterback than he was, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And so where's that second pitch from the Ravens and from Lamar?
The question is Lamar capable of being that guy? When I listen to Lamar Jackson has a tendency, Jeff, to say the quiet part out loud. He very much, he seems very authentic and open, almost to a fault, just because there's some things you'd maybe not want the world to know quite as much, like the thing that you said a few minutes ago about, hey, they know what we're calling. They seem to know exactly what we're going to do every snap. And that's because, yeah, they have. They've watched film, and they know exactly what you're going to do every single time. But Lamar, to me, sounds depressed or dejected, one, because I think in his brain, he sees the problem but doesn't see the fix. He doesn't see the solution to how do I get back to being this guy. Now, if he was insecure at all about some part of his game, that has to have been magnified by a factor of about 1,000 yeah. this year, and he doesn't know how to fix. He's run into something he's never seen before, because at Louisville, nobody could stop him. And last year, you saw what happened. Now it's like, okay, now what am I supposed to do? And if this dude, and then you have to think, all right, well, if he loses half a step, then what is he?
Yeah. Well, he surely looks frustrated on the field at times with his offense. And I guess, you know, this is the question that we don't have an answer for until we have another OC calling his offensive plays, is that, is this offense being run like this because they don't trust Lamar Jackson to be in a traditional offense?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this run this way because Greg Roman doesn't know anything else, right? And that they don't expand the offense. So it could be a little bit of both, right? This is what Greg Roman wants to do. Plus, you know, Lamar has some limitations, but we don't really know till we have another offense that Lamar's in to see whether or not he's limited. And look, I think he's much more talented than Colin Kaepernick is, or was, I should say. But you know, Cap played well in that offense. And Cap wasn't able to change to a pro-style offense very well. And we'll see if Lamar can do that, because it will happen eventually. They're going to have to eventually change what they do. It's not going to be this year. It's going to be next year. But will he make that adjustment? I'm curious to find out.
Do you think there's any kind of revelatory thoughts about maybe this is why Greg Roman hasn't been a head coach
100%.
Or hasn't gotten the opportunities, is because maybe there's a little bit of fear of exposing that you get too high on Greg Roman for a short time, but that it fizzles out?
Well, yeah, we've seen that now in a couple of places, but I really think, though, that when you look at the best coaches in the NFL are able to adjust on the fly, right? They're able to do different things. They're able to be multiple, and Roman hasn't showed that yet. So I think you're worried about if you're the offensive play caller, and you haven't shown the ability to adjust. Well, what happens when you're the head coach? If something happens on the team, are you able to adjust? Are you able to, in a COVID season, we everyone's had to adjust, right? Are you able to adjust on the fly? Are you able to to make changes? You're able to skip a day of practice when you really need a day of practice. Are you able to adjust your schedule to now make that day up tomorrow? Like, what are you able to do all these things on the fly? And part of that, evaluation is, hey, offensively, are you able to adjust? Have you shown the ability to do something else? And so I think people do worry about him as a coach because of that.
They're 6-4 right now. After the Steelers, though, they play Dallas at Cleveland, Jacksonville, Giants, and Cincinnati without Joe Burrow. They could easily still finish 11-5.
Yes.
Like, it's still very doable, or at the very worst, 10-6. And we're talking about them. I know it's been very negative. It feels like we're talking about a 3-7 team. We're not. We're talking about a 6-4 team that, look, they had the ball on the 15-yard line and could have beaten the Titans on Sunday, and had them in a pretty good position until the third quarter kind of went awry for them. They have been beaten by some decent teams. I think the Patriots loss is the one you look at and you're just like, yeah, they probably shouldn't have lost that game. Not based on what we've seen from New England. New England, I guess, is out of it now. I'm done.
You're out.
Yeah, I'm finally done talking about that. But, I mean, they lost to Kansas City. They lost to Pittsburgh by 4. They lost to the Patriots by 6 and the Titans by 6. Margin for error is small in this league, but I just named 3 likely playoff teams out of their 4 losses.
And that's the problem. And look, this last weekend they're up 11 points, right, in the fourth quarter, 21-10 to Tennessee, who really in 4 or 5 weeks has not looked like the Tennessee we thought they would be, right? After since that Bills game, they just haven't been the same team. And to let them come back at home was not good for Baltimore.
No, not at all. And you're right. Literally, the questions here in Nashville were, is this offense regressing? Because other than the Bears, where if you score 14 points, you have a good chance to win the game, there hadn't been much going right. And the defense, of course, had been struggling all year long, except against Chicago, really.
Yeah.
And that's not really that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot if everybody else is torching you. So when the Ravens went up, I still felt like, hey, the Ravens are going to win this game. And the fact that they didn't was definitely an indictment. And it's another one of those, when things start to go against that team, they are not built in any way to come back. Like, if momentum starts to go against them, what they want to do offensively does not enable them to just shoot the gap and get back into the game that fast.
Right, right.
So that becomes a problem. We'll look at the rest of the AFC, and we'll start to kind of look at the NFC as well. I do want to talk about Philadelphia. I guess we're just going to bring you down today. Talk about the Ravens. We're going to talk about the Eagles. We're going to talk about these two games as well. We'll see what Jeff's betting on, because I know this degeneracy is not going to take a respite on the holiday.
It might need to, because my record the last 3 weeks says it's almost impossible to be as bad as I've been. So
wow,
me, please. Yeah, I'm 2-12-1 in my last 3 weeks on Super Contest picks. It's like I'm not sharp, but I'm also like not that bad.
Yeah.
This is impossible to be this bad. I was 56% before the last 3 weeks, so I don't know. Whew, it's rough.
Your prognostication has caught COVID.
Yeah, and I have the vaccine though this week. I'm gonna have a great week. So I'm back this week, folks.
If not, you might need to quarantine yourself for a couple of
yes,
weeks.
Exactly.
877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. We will talk about the Eagles. Just a whole lot of football to talk about. Even though it's just two games, they're not the sexiest matchups. Who's the MVP? We already talked about that. Who's the defensive player of the year? There's just a lot that we can get into as we figure out all of a sudden that we're closer to the end of this season than maybe you think. It's kind of been, it feels like it just started. Maybe that's just because we missed it so much. A lot more NFL, a lot more college football talk on the flip side. Stick with us. Jeff Schwartz, Clay Travis is out. Jeff is with me. We'll be right back on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back. Outkick the Coverage here on this Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to Clay and Laura and his kids. To Whitlock, to Danny G, to Bobby, to Ryan, to everybody at Outkick. We appreciate being on. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin with you this morning. We'll be here tomorrow. My broadcast partner in Nashville, Ramon Foster, will join us tomorrow as well. That'll be a fun conversation. Yeah, so Lions-Texans going to kick us off, Jeff.
Woo-woo!
Yeah!
I'm excited, by the way, for Ramon to come on tomorrow. Hopefully I say something again that bothers a lot of old people that listen to your show, and they send me mean tweets about how they're never listening again because I said something that was totally, totally boring and bland. They took it the wrong way. So
something's hilarious. I know they're all listening right now since I'm doing this show. It's because our show's not on, so we're running right now on my station, Fox Sports Radio affiliate, 104.5 The Zone here in Nashville. And it's amazing to me the way people talk to you, like just kind of watching it and like how you fire back and try to explain what you're doing, and they think that you're being sensitive, not realizing that you just don't care.
Yeah, it's a weird Twitter is an odd place, man. First of all, people think they can just talk and blast people with blue check marks that we're not allowed to come back at them. It's like a weird thing on Twitter. Like, why would I? Because I have a blue check mark. My bosses do not care. And they actually appreciate when I call people out. Like, they text me, like, I love your tweet. Like, they keep going at people. Like, I get a literal text message from my bosses, like, dude, that stuff on Twitter is awesome. Like, I'm not cussing at people. I'm not calling them names. I'm just like, but the idea that like I cannot come back at you because I have a blue check mark is so silly. Like it's not of real life. Like, of course I can come. If you want to talk to me in a way that's demeaning, or why can't I come back at you? It makes no sense to me. So like that thing, that dynamic on Twitter, I don't get. But, and then I also don't get, like, I don't get the tweets at me that where people try to like invalidate my career. Like, what are you going to tell me that like I, oh, you only played 8 years. Okay?
Your brother's better than you, Jeff. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Shocking. I didn't know that. he's better than me my whole life. It's not a surprise. But like the idea where people are like, oh, you only played 8 years. One guy the other day was like, you only started 39 games. I was like, oh.
How many did you start?
And okay. Your point is what? Should I just not be happy with my career? I mean, I wish I didn't get hurt all the time. But like, it's so funny. And when you share stories about the locker room, and again, I'm glad to have Ramon on because, the locker room talk we're going to have tomorrow. Again, it's not the locker room talk that we heard 4 years ago. That's not what this is. This is like what we, and it's respectful. We're going to talk, but like the locker room is a different place, man. We say things that, a little not politically correct. And I came on your show and I made a comment about white defensive linemen.
Oh, gosh. I was trying to figure out what you were talking about specifically. That was unbelievable.
It was the white
Jeff.
Defensive lineman stuff.
Yeah,
And it wasn't even bad. We just said that, like, Ramon and I, we joked that Cam Newton got strip sacked against the Bills by a white defensive lineman with no gloves on, wearing like an elbow brace. And that's just, and when you do a scouting report for defensive lineman as offensive lineman, the first thing you write next to a white defensive lineman, it's just high effort. It's a joke we've had for years. It doesn't actually like mean anything. We just like joke about high effort, because if you look around the NFL, whenever there's been one, when I was playing, like a Vandenbosch who played for the Titans, right?
Yeah.
Effort off the charts. It was a guy in the Buffalo Bills for years who it was just like effort, like full speed ahead. Chris Long, look at Chris Long, right? Like, guy played so hard. And it just was a joke we always had. Like, we just wrote a high effort guy every time. The first thing on every offensive line I've been at six offensive lines. And Ramon was like, oh my God, you did it too? And I've never been the Steelers, right? I knew anyone who played for the Steelers. And we just joked about it. Like, we had a giggle about it. People were so offended. I don't understand why.
It was unreal. Like, it was, and I immediately went to the old, what we used to joke about with Clay is about how many white cornerbacks have there been.
Yeah.
It's just like how rare that is. And like, we had Dustin Fox, who now hosts in Ohio, who played at Ohio State, because he's one of the few. He came on and talked about it, and just the way people would talk to him in the locker room, like, you're a unicorn. Basically, because that existed. But Ramon explained it. It was just like, yeah, those white dudes without gloves were psychos.
They're crazy. Like, I don't know why people got so upset about it. Like, we weren't like, are we demeaning white people? I don't understand.
Last I checked, you were white, Jeff.
But I also said that they, like, the thing that you write down is their effort is high, sky high. Like, I don't understand why that's a bad thing. Dude, yeah, it's very rare that, but the no glove guys, man, those guys are psychos, dude. They're crazy because, I mean, I would tape my hands. I use 6 rolls of tape to play. I tape my fingers individually under my gloves, and I would tape them over my gloves. I don't know how guys play without, especially like defensive line, like without gloves on. That's like so crazy. And he knew he had an offensive lineman in Pittsburgh. What was his name?
Villanueva, right?
No, not Villanueva.
Oh no, he's still there, but
it was a white offensive lineman who was a backup who came in every now and then for the Steelers. He had wear no gloves and no tape. And it was like he played center and guard. I remember his name, but like
that just sounds like you're not going to play very long, or you're out there playing with three broken fingers.
He played for a while, but like I was like, what do you? I was like, this is incredible. I don't know how he did that. It's just psycho. Yeah. So it was people got so angry, man. It was so funny.
I just think people need to find a reason to get angry right now. It's so frustrating to me from a day to day basis. I've gotten to where look. Because we're in this industry, we can't just not be on Twitter. We can't just not be involved on social media. But outside the show, at least this week for my own sanity, like when we're done with the show, I'm done until the next morning. And that sucks because I would love to be able to talk to people and all this kind of stuff. But it's just not good for your mental well-being to be there very often. Like what was the joke that somebody said this like 3-4 days ago. It's like Twitter is you show up for a Halloween party in costume, the door closes, and it's actually a BDSM dungeon. and you're stuck.
See, but if you understand what it is, like I understand very well what social media is, so I don't get offended by social media. And I get it for what it is, which is like not real life, right? It's just not. And so like if you understand that when you're showing up to a Halloween party, there's a chance that it's a BDSM torture den, then you like if you get that, if you understand that going into it, then you have a more pleasant experience, which I do. Again, Twitter is not always pleasant, but and I like trying to teach football, and that's partly why I have Twitter. And so I get
your tape breakdowns and like here's 15 seconds explaining this Trey Smith block at Tennessee or this is why this guy was able to break free and all this. Like that stuff's good. Like that's the good side of Twitter is like people like you and Chris Brown at Smart Football.
Chris Brown's so great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And Nate Tice of The Athletic and like all these guys that just are tape junkies and maybe I think Tice used to be a quality control coach with the Raiders.
Yeah, his dad's Mike Tice.
Yeah, exactly. Nate's a really smart dude. So, like, I follow him, and you learn a ton. Baldinger breaks those things down. Only thing about Baldinger is here's a video that's, like, 8 seconds long, but this video, because the way he shoots it is 2.5 minutes for 8 seconds. Like, that can be a little annoying.
He doesn't sometimes understand, like, the framing of in his phone. But Baldy's, I mean, his videos are great. He has access to the film. Like, it's fantastic. He's good at his job.
Yeah, and you mentioned Orlovsky. And, I mean, we're in an era right now, I think, Jeff, where there are just a really smart group of people that are around the game that are making it accessible for everybody else. Like, now, people thought they knew football because they played Madden. Now they know football because here's Dan Orlovsky, and here is I think Ryan Clark does a fantastic job. There are just a lot of guys on multiple networks that give you insight into the game, and increasingly there's a whole lot of offensive linemen that tend to be going into media.
Yeah,
and apparently all of them I'm supposed to work with.
Correct.
Lincoln Kennedy, you, Ramon Foster. I don't even know what's going to happen next, but I'm looking around the league and I'm just like, which offensive lineman's going to be my next broadcast partner? That's just kind of how it's going. And Ramon just constantly says, well, it's just because offensive linemen are the smartest players on the team.
Definitely. And Lincoln Kennedy is great. He was obviously a long time NFL offensive lineman. He does Raider games now. They showed him in the booth the other day on Sunday night. He was there with Brent calling the Raiders game on the radio.
Yeah, but I mean, Joe Thomas is doing media.
Oh yeah,
Jeff Saturday has been doing media for a long time. There's just a lot of dudes who display offense. Schlereth's another one. He's been great for a long time. Like, That's just a position that seems to breed pretty good talent.
I think because we have to actually know a lot of the offense, first of all. And I think we're obviously very bright. That helps, too. But I think we see the game differently. We don't take ourselves too seriously. I think it's pretty important to, like, not take yourself so seriously. That's part of it.
Well, I think that right there is the way you survive Twitter. Not just not taking yourself seriously, but just trying not to take anything else seriously either. Just, you can consume what you want to consume, but I still don't think it's probably your best idea to be there all day. Like Thanksgiving, yeah, you're probably going to not have as many people around you. I mean, we've got the two sets of parents coming, and we already know what the conversation's going to be. How are you feeling, Abby? How's everything going? It's going to be about our puppy, and it's going to be about our unborn child, and I'm just going to recede into the corner of the room with a plate, and no one's going to even notice that I'm there.
Good. You have a nice, quiet day.
I'm going to be an offensive lineman. I'm going to be a good NFL official. You're not going to notice me. Unlike, can you explain to me how a team gets 9 holding penalties the way the Colts did against the Packers?
I need to go back and watch that. I'm going to go. I was putting my kids to bed at that time. I saw the end of the game. I watched the overtime, but I didn't watch all the holding penalties. I'm going to, you know what? Maybe in the break, I'll start watching the end of that game and see what happened. Quinn Nelson, like, leads the NFL in holdings. They had like 3 the other day.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to watch that. I actually, and you know, your Titans go play Indy. We'll probably talk more about that tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a big game.
But yeah, it was a lot. They tried to give that game up.
Yeah, well, the one thing Ramon said, and you probably would maybe be able to see this, is somebody clued in the officials, sent a letter or talked to somebody, and was just like, "Hey, here's what Quentin Nelson's doing."
Correct.
And then since that point, they're all watching for it. And they're calling it.
So before every game, the coaches talk to the officials and they kind of warn them about a couple things. They tell them if there is a trick play they're running, just to like let the officials know, like, if we line up in a weird formation, this is why. It's just to kind of let them know. And then they let them know, like, hey man, Quentin Nelson, this guy, when he does this, he holds. He does that, you know, and like they let everyone know. And that's part of the gamesmanship of playing sports. And it felt like they were clued into Quentin Nelson this past weekend.
And you hope then that somebody close to him, somebody, the offensive line coach and everybody else, is just like, hey, here's what it is that you're doing that you're getting dinged for that we've got to stop doing.
And also worth bringing up, too, that the officials also watch film throughout the week. And so they see as well whether they missed a call or whether a guy's holding more than he should. But yeah, that's part of it.
Coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios, this is Outkick the Coverage. Clay out for the rest of the week. He'll be back on Monday. Jason Martin, Jeff Schwartz with you today and tomorrow. I do want to talk about Carson Wentz and whether or not he says, hey, no discussion on whether or not I'm being benched. And I'm watching Miami putting Tua Tagovailoa on the bench on Sunday because Fitzpatrick, quote, gives them a better chance to win, unquote. I'm just like, are we finally getting to the time here in Philadelphia where maybe it's time to do something different? We'll talk about that. We'll continue to break down the league. Also, who's the best team in the NFC? AFC, I think we kind of know, and it's not the undefeated team, which feels disrespectful, except that one team has Patrick Mahomes playing for it, so it kind of stops that discussion.
Yes.
But the NFC is fascinating right now. Wide open. A lot of good teams. But who do you feel the most confident about right now? That's something we'll discuss. Plus the Taysom Hill thing. Because, of course, we're going to talk about that. We'll be right back. Jason Martin, Jeff Schwartz, in for Clay on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
A little Sublime for you on this Thanksgiving. Welcome back. Outkick the Coverage. Clay's back on Monday. Jeff Schwartz in with me the next 2 days. He's at Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. I'm at JMart Radio. Jeff, BYU's got nothing to say right now, right?
Oh, this man. BYU is angry with me. They're angry with me, Jason. They're angry because I question them for not taking the Washington game. And look, I cover the Pac-12 for a living, right? Pac-12 radio Monday through Friday. So I understand what the Pac-12 put out as far as the protocols are having to play, right? They have to play in Washington at a Pac-12 school. The Pac-12 was allowed to cancel that game up to Thursday if another Pac-12 opponent is available. And look, Washington, Utah got scheduled Tuesday. I get all that. You have to do the Pac-12 testing protocols. So my point was, look, BYU had no other option to play this weekend. There's no other Power 5 conference that was going to offer them a game this weekend. There were no Group of 5 conference schools that were even worth taking a game. And if you had taken the game with Washington, the only thing you would be out was the cost of additional testing, which I don't know how much that would cost. BYU fans were throwing out number $3 million. The people were like throwing out number $3 million it would cost. That feels high,
no,
but whatever.
No,
it feels way too high. So you would have to test as it went Monday and Tuesday by the time Washington got rescheduled to play Utah, and you would be the winner in this, right? You would be the team that tried to schedule a Pac-12 opponent. Washington will be ranked eventually. They're not ranked at the moment because they're really young. A Pac-12 opponent, you would have said, okay, we'll play you on the road. There's no fans in Seattle, but on the road in Washington, you would have been the hero. You would have been the team that got canceled on. Instead, the first story that came out of that was BYU refuses to play Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And the first story typically sticks. And I think that played a role in the committee putting them at 14th, because Cincinnati was 7 and BYU was 14. They're not 7 spots different. If they played each other, it would be a pick-up game, right? It would not be that far apart. So I think committee was sending a message like, hey, your schedule wasn't good enough. And part of it is they're an independent still. Notre Dame saw the writing on the wall. Notre Dame said, look, to play a season this year, we have to join a conference. We have to join the ACC. And they did. And now they're going to make the playoff because of it. BYU, I don't know if they had the option to join a conference, but they didn't. And they're kind of paying that price now, being 14, which is too low. It's objectively too low. But I did chuckle because a lot of their fans said to me, we don't need to play Washington. We're going to make a New Year's Six Bowl. And I was like, all right, whatever you say. But yeah, and they came in 14th, which right now, I mean, Oregon's going to win this weekend, beat Oregon State, and they're going to jump BYU probably. And Oregon's not as good as BYU at the moment.
Oregon needs to play Cincinnati. Oregon and Cincinnati need to get together. BYU needs to play Cincinnati. But the bigger thing, what you just said, is you can be the aggrieved party if you just schedule it, because then you're like, we tried to do everything we could, and they've got to go play their Pac-12 game, and we're disappointed. And then you can play the victim a little bit, but it comes across like you did everything in your power to try and find a game. Now, would it have mattered and gotten you in the top four? Let's be real, probably not. But you have to do everything you can and make it look like you have turned over every stone in order to try and improve your situation.
Exactly.
So of course you become the villain there. I mean, yeah, the likelihood that the game was going to happen if Washington had a chance to go play Utah or whatever wasn't going to be good. But that's not BYU didn't have the luxury to assume that and then not take the game. BYU needed to go the opposite direction, because everybody loves a victim, and people would have been like, look at BYU getting the shaft because of all this. The narrative and how it would have been preached would have been completely different. Third hour of the show coming up next.